You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Tuesday the 11th of August 2020 and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, streaming at radioalbion.com. Well, I just want to give out a warning before we get into the content of today's episode. It's not going to be a family-friendly episode, so if you've got children listening, they probably shouldn't listen to any more. Unfortunately, we do have some really horrific things that are happening in our countries. And much as I would like to just talk about positive things and the greatest Britons that we've had, for instance, and successes of nationalist activities, we do have to cover some of these awful things that are happening. We can't just brush them under the carpet and pretend that they aren't happening. And some news came out yesterday of just about the worst crime that can ever take place. Crimes against babies. Almost 450 sex crimes against babies under the age of one were committed in the United Kingdom in the past year, as a child is abused every 7 minutes. Police forces in the UK recorded 73,518 offences, including rape, online grooming and sexual assault against children in 2019-20, similar to the 73,379 the previous year, but up 57% from the 46,000 in 2014-2015. So it's gone up by 57% in the last 5 years. The sickening figures obtained by the NSPCC under Freedom of Information laws suggest girls were four times more likely to be victims than boys. More than 8,000 offences were committed against 14-year-olds, while 12,374 sex crimes were recorded against children under 10 and 449 against babies yet to reach their first birthday. I mean, this is absolutely horrific. We'll get into what some of the reasons might be for this after a quote from NSPCC Chief Executive Peter Wallace, who said, "The crisis of child sexual abuse is not going away, and behind these figures are thousands of children and young people who have reported crimes that can have a devastating impact on their lives. Urgent action is needed to prevent abuse and to ensure children are supported to recover when they bravely speak out." And it's likely to actually be more than this, because the figures only came from 44 out of the 45 police forces across the UK. So they don't actually include Greater Manchester Police, who did not provide information. And what he is saying here is we need to prevent this. So in order to prevent it, we need to work out why it's happening. Now, it could be that these are just the most wickedly evil people that are trying to carry out the most wickedly evil thing that they can possibly do. Perhaps they're Satanists, perhaps they're into black magic, perhaps they're just sickos that want to do this most sickest, horrific thing that they could possibly do. That is a reason, I believe, for some of this. I mean, pedophiles, they're not... Much as they will try and tell us, or they will today, you have these people calling themselves MAPS rather than pedophiles, minor attracted people, who try and advocate for pedophilia being treated the same as homosexuality and try to say that it's just another kind of sexuality. the difference between a sexuality and this is that this is harming the people that they do this to. They're victims. They cannot actually give consent, and they know full well that they are hurting these children in horrific ways that the children are not capable of processing yet, because they are innocent children. What these pedophiles do is they steal that innocence away. And innocence itself is the most precious thing in the universe, is innocence. And once it's taken away, you can never get it back. And that's what these devils are doing, is that they are taking the innocence away from our most precious possession, our most precious resource, which is our children. This is why I say they are absolutely evil. It's not a sexual thing. It's not a sexuality. It's just pure wickedness and evilness to take away innocence like that. That's before you even get into the physical damage that is caused by doing things like this. So that is one reason for this. But why would it have increased so much? Why has there been a 57% increase in the last 5 years? Well, it could be because we've had a massive increase in immigration, because this is the sort of crime that we see happening in the places where immigrants are coming from. Now, I am not saying that all of this increase is caused by foreigners, but if we want to, as the NSPCC chief executive says, if we want to prevent this abuse from happening in the first place, my response would be we need to look at the people that are doing it and see if there is an overrepresentation of people coming from parts of the world where this is rampant. And Africa has an appalling record for this. And the information that I've got here comes from Wikipedia. It's sourced from mainstream sources. They say South Africa has some of the highest incidences of child and infant rape in the world. The Tears Foundation and the MRC stated 50% of South Africa's children will be abused before the age of 18. So that is half of them will be abused by the age of 18. So what that tells us is that probably at least half the population are doing the abuse. If half of them have been victimized by this abuse, it has to be the other half that are carrying out the abuse. And these are the people that we are allowing into our country. These are the people that we have been told they're just chasing their dream of working in Britain. Well, they may be wanting to work in Britain, but they also have these undesirable habits such as raping children that goes on in Africa, which is now going on over here in Britain. The MRC study stated that in 2009, 15% were under 12 years old. In 2017, the police reported that 9% of reported rape are those of 9 years old or younger, with agencies reporting an increase throughout the country. That's 1 in 10 of them are under the age of 9. They haven't even reached puberty yet. You can't say that the person that is doing that is not going to be aware of the physical damage that they're going to be doing to a child of that age. Although there are varying numbers on the number of reported rapes of children, one report states that in 2000, 21,538 rapes and attempted rapes of children under the age of 18 were reported. And another from 2001 states that there were 24,892. Child welfare groups believe that the number of unreported incidents could be up to 10 times that number. So you're talking hundreds of thousands of rapes of children just in 1 year, just in 2001 alone. And that was 20 years ago. There will have been a huge increase since then, of course. The largest increase in attacks was against children under the age of 7. A trade union report said a child was being raped in South Africa every 3 minutes. Some cite a 400% increase in sexual violence against children in the decade preceding 2002, and that it may still be on the rise. A third of the cases are committed by a family member or a close relative. This is children that they are raping, and we've got a huge increase in the number of infant rapes that are happening in Britain as well. Is it a coincidence that we have a huge increase of immigration from Africa? A number of high-profile infant rapes appeared since 2001, including the fact that they required extensive reconstructive surgery to rebuild urinary, genital, abdominal or tracheal systems. In October 2001, a nine-month-old girl named Shipang was raped by an HIV-positive man and had to undergo extensive reconstructive surgery in Cape Town. In February 2002, an eight-month-old infant was reportedly gang-raped by four men. Only one has been charged. The infant had required extensive reconstructive surgery. The eight-month-old's injuries were so extensive, increased attention on prosecution has occurred. Yet only one of them was charged, even though there's been increased attention on prosecution. The instances of infant rape are so bad in South Africa that they actually have school plays based upon this to tell the South African students that they shouldn't do this, that they shouldn't rape babies, they shouldn't rape infants, let alone that they shouldn't rape anyway, but specifically they shouldn't be raping infants. And they have school students acting out high school plays around this subject because it is such a common occurrence, which is now on the rise in Britain. A significant contributing factor for the escalation in child abuse is the widespread myth in HIV-ravaged South Africa that having sex with a virgin will cure a man of AIDS. This virgin cleansing myth also exists in Zambia, Zimbabwe, and Nigeria. The child abusers are often relatives of their victims and are at times their fathers or providers. Now, Nigeria, the main language that they speak in Nigeria is English, which is why a lot of the people that try to come to Britain from Africa are coming from Nigeria. They're coming from one of the centres of this, where they believe that if you rape a virgin, you will cure yourself of AIDS. So not only are these infants going through this horrific ordeal, afterwards, they are often HIV positive because it's been somebody with AIDS that has raped them. A survey by the University of South Africa in South Africa found that 18% of labourers thought that having sex with a virgin cures HIV/AIDS. So one in five of the general population believes in this myth. So if they are diagnosed with this, then that is then an encouragement for them to go out and rape an infant. You could say, well, why aren't they raping somebody older? They don't believe that somebody older is still going to be a virgin in Africa. An earlier study in 1999 by sexual health educators in Gauteng reported that 32% of the survey participants believed in this myth. According to Becky McConey of the Girl Child Network in Zimbabwe, the myth is perpetuated by traditional healers advising HIV-positive men to cure their disease by having sex with virgin girls. So it's their traditional healers that are telling them to do this. You could say, well, they don't have traditional healers in Britain. They have doctors. But we do have these witch doctors over here. We've found traces of black magic that are going on. Even the black evangelical churches, some of them have been trying to sell COVID cures and fake cures. And we see them carrying out exorcisms and all sorts of weird stuff that goes on. I know I'm not saying that all the fake refugees that we have over here are going to be a threat like this, but we have to look at the amount of this that goes on in Africa, in Nigeria, and South Africa. And we have to, and as it says here, that it's the center of the world for it. And then we have to look at the details of the instances of it happening in Britain and see if there is a connection. And if there is a connection, then surely we should be preventing these people from coming over here. If you want to prevent the abuse of children in Britain, prevent the abusers from coming here in the first place. In 2002, psychologist Mike Earl Taylor wrote that the virgin cure myth may explain the staggering rise in child or infant rapes in South Africa, and UNICEF has attributed the rape of hundreds of girls to the virgin cleansing myth. And it must be thousands of girls, because as we were saying earlier, it's hundreds of thousands of them that are raped every year. So we've had this huge increase in infant rape in Britain now, and a huge increase in South Africa. Now, of course, the figures that we're being told about, the report actually comes from The Sun. It doesn't break down ethnicity of the victims. It doesn't tell us how many of the perpetrators were caught either, or what the ethnicity of the perpetrators are. Will anybody be brave enough in the mainstream media to point out that there could be a connection here, and that if we've had a staggering rise in these cases in Britain, could that be linked to the staggering rise in Africa? And surely, if we want to prevent this, as the head of the NSPCC was saying, we should be looking at stopping immigration into the country. And this is just another of the awful consequences of promoting multiculturalism and leaving our borders open to these people to come into the country. As I say, I'm not saying it's all them. There are also evil white men that are involved. There are evil white women that are involved in this. But this is the center of it. The center of it is in Africa. And if we bring Africans into our country, that is going to be what they bring with them. Moving on to another news story. This actually comes from the Metro. And this, I think, is a good instance of the way that the mainstream media will twist results to try and make them fit their own paradigm. And it also shows us how much the mainstream media is promoting race mixing. Even people that aren't nationalists are noticing the adverts that are on the television and how they all seem to have a white woman with a black boyfriend or a black husband and mixed race children. The promotion of race mixing is everywhere, and it's horrendous that they do this, that they promote this idea. It steals the identity from the child. It means the child doesn't look like his parents. It means the child doesn't look like any of his grandparents, any of his extended family. It means the child doesn't have an ethnic identity. It means that white women, who are a tiny, tiny minority, I think they're about 2% of the world's population are white women. It means that white women are encouraged to not produce more white children, but to produce brown children, who already make up at least 90% of the world are non-white. It's just the most destructive thing there can possibly be, is to promote race mixing. And there are brave, courageous, mixed race individuals who have written about this and about the problems that it caused for them, having their identity stolen from them. But for the majority, they just have to put up with this because they can't change things. That's the way it is. And they can't hate their parents. Their parents brought them into this world. But the people that are promoting this, the people making the advertisements, encouraging this in the magazines and in the television programs, I mean, they should be taken to court for this. They should really be made to be punished for what they have done, because it is so evil. And some of them must know what they are doing. They must realize what they're doing. And those that do know what they're doing, because of course there are plenty that just don't think about these things and think, oh, well, it's just love is love and we're all the same. There are plenty like that. But there are also those that are doing this out of a wicked, wicked desire to eliminate the white race. And we know that because we have quotes of them saying just that. New research has found that people whose parents are genetically diverse are likely to be taller and smarter than those whose parents have a similar genetic makeup. So obviously they are trying to promote race mixing here. They're trying to say if you have a partner of a different race, your child is likely to be smarter than their parents. But of course, we already know that if a white person marries a black person and they have a mixed race child, that mixed race child is going to be, on average, 10 IQ points higher than somebody who is black. We already know that mixed race people have an average IQ of 85, and African blacks have an IQ of 75, and whites have an IQ of 100 on average. This is why American blacks have an IQ that is, on average, 10 points higher than in Africa. So what they're doing here, they're not being entirely honest. They're not being entirely dishonest either. They're saying they're smarter than those whose parents have a similar genetic makeup. They will be smarter than the black parent because they've got white DNA, which will increase their IQ rating. But it doesn't mean that they'll be smarter than the white parent. It means they'll just be smarter than the black parent. And of course, they don't tell you that in this article. Children whose parents were comparatively different genetically were also more likely to go to university and have a bigger lung capacity, though scientists didn't find any link to health issues such as a person's chances of developing heart disease and diabetes. And that confirms that this is what we are talking about, because white people do have a bigger lung capacity than blacks. This is why white people are better at swimming. Blacks also have much denser bones, so they're heavier in the water, and where they have a smaller lung capacity, they can't fill that up with air, so they don't float so easily. So that's why you don't really see many blacks on the Olympic swimming team. But of course, if you then have a white partner and a black partner and they produce a child, that child is going to have a slightly larger lung capacity than their black parent. And what this does is it proves that that's what they're talking about here. They're talking about whites and blacks, and that's why they would have this bigger lung capacity. But it wouldn't be bigger than the white parent. Nearly 1 in 10 couples are now ethnically mixed, they proudly tell us, according to ONS research. I mean, it's incredible that they are so proud of this and think that this is so wonderful. And you could say that nearly 1 in 10 couples have destroyed the inheritance of their children. That's what it's basically saying. 1 in 10 couples have destroyed the ethnic heritage of their children. The 2011 data said that there are 2.3 million people living as part of a mixed couple in the UK, up by more than a third in a decade. So this is increasing. And this is what happens when you have a multicultural country, when you bring in non-whites into an originally white country. They end up interbreeding. The whole nation turns brown. And once it's turned brown, they no longer have the ability to maintain the civilization. I mean, this is the story. This is the story of the world. This is the story of our history of the world. This is why all our previous civilizations fell. This is why we have non-white people living among the ruins of civilizations that were there thousands of years before. Because the original people that built the civilization no longer had the ability to maintain it, because they were no longer the same people that built it. There was a famous saying, the reason why Athens fell is because there were no more Athenians left, because so many non-Athenians had moved in there and interbred with them. And the same is now happening in Europe. Europe was the last place left in the world to not actually have non-whites in it, which is why it's now the last civilization is in Europe. But because we went out to the non-white countries and gave them our technology and then allowed them to come into our countries, the same thing is happening to us now. If we won't learn from history, we are doomed to repeat it. It's just incredible that they are so proud about this and trumpeting it as if it's a really, really great thing that it's gone up by a third in a decade. 833,000 children, around 7% of those under 16 or still at school in England and Wales, are being brought up by an ethnically mixed couple. So 7% of the children that could have been born white have now been born non-white, and we're supposed to think that this is a great thing. And don't forget that all of those children, that they are now incapable of producing white children. They're never going to be able to produce white children again. They will always be non-white, their descendants. People may say, oh, but can't they interbreed with somebody white and turn themselves white again? Well, DNA tests tell us that can't happen. If you have a DNA test, it will tell you if you've got non-white blood in you from hundreds of years ago. It doesn't disappear. It stays there. This is why it's such the multicultural countries are such a threat to white people. Once the interbreeding has started, that's it. I mean, if it was discouraged, if it was properly discouraged and people were told what the results would be and what it was like for the children to not look like their parents, and it was frowned upon, then it wouldn't be very likely to happen, because we are programmed to choose life partners and friends that have a similar amount of the same heritable genes that we have. That's just part of life. That's part of nature. That's why we have these different races. That's why we have different species and different subspecies of animal, because they're programmed to partner with people that are like themselves. We're told in the Bible that marriage should be between bone of my bones and flesh of my flesh, somebody with the same bone structure and the same flesh color as you. That's what marriage should be. We're told in the Bible it should be kind after kind, each within its own kind. And we're encouraging people to marry out of their kind. We're encouraging people to produce children that don't look like them, that instead belong to another group. This is the thing, that the world, the humanity is made up of all these different groups, and we have limited resources that we compete for. And our greatest resource is our young people. That is of greatest value to us, and the brightest young people could go on to create amazing things and bring great technological advances for our people. And instead of valuing our young like that, we are encouraging people of breedable ages to give their children to another group. We're encouraging them to interbreed with another group and produce children for that other group instead of producing children for ourselves. It really does seem as if all the institutions are in the hands of people that hate whites, that just want to see us bred out of existence. And talking of the establishment being in the hands of people who hate whites, and a lot of the people that hate whites are self-hating whites, but one particular white-hating MP is Dawn Butler, the Labour MP and former Shadow Equalities Minister. And she was stopped in the car that she was travelling in the other day. Seemed to me to be a pretty routine police stop. And she's made a huge fuss about this and said that it's all about institutional racism and she shouldn't have been stopped in her car. She recorded this on a video. The police were very, very polite. And she's still making a fuss about it on the television today. And it turns out that the driver of the car was white. And when the police make a stop like that, And they can't see who's in the front of the car. They're driving along behind. They don't know who is in the front of the car. And the reason why she was stopped is because when the police put in the number plate, it said that the car belonged to somebody in Yorkshire. And obviously, whoever the car belonged to in Yorkshire had something about him that the police wanted to check. Maybe he had a criminal record or whatever. They wanted to stop the car for that reason. And as soon as the police discovered that this wasn't actually that car, they said she should go. But this Dawn Butler is complaining that this must have been racism. What? Why did the police stop her car in the first place? Well, the police run through people's number plates when they see cars go by, so they can check to see whether the insurance is there, whether the MOT is there, whether the car is legal, whatever information they have got on the driver. And quite clearly, they put in the wrong number, but the car that it thought it was, maybe it didn't have insurance. Maybe the person involved was, or the person that supposedly owned the car, maybe they were wanted for something. And to be quite honest, they don't really even need anything, but there must have been a reason for them to have stopped the car. And it must have been to do with whoever the owner of the car was in Yorkshire that they thought it was. But she's still going on about stop and search and racism. And she's claiming that stop and search needs to be scrapped entirely, because when they stop and search black people, only 15% of them are found to have contraband items on them. But what kind of logic is that? By contraband items, they mean drugs or knives. So by stopping and search, they're actually preventing a large amount of crime there. 15% of those stop and search is successful. I mean, even if it was just 1% or 2% was successful, then it would still be seen as, well, it's necessary to actually have that power. But she is saying that regardless of that, regardless of the fact that 15% of them could have knives on them, we must stop this profiling and this stop and search. It's insane. She's a real race hustler. I'm glad she's no longer the Shadow Equalities Minister. Well, I have got some good news to finish the podcast with. Good news for people in Britain, that is. The number of people needing hospital treatment for coronavirus infections has plummeted since the peak of the outbreak in the UK. In the 7 days leading up to August the 5th, 375 people were hospitalised with COVID in England, compared to 18,638 between March the 28th and April the 3rd. That is a huge reduction. While the number of patients in hospitals would be expected to drop as cases decline and the virus fades out, data suggests fewer people are getting severely ill as well. Since late April, when testing first started to become available outside of hospitals, the proportion of positive cases being hospitalised has dropped from around a quarter to less than 10%, averaging 7%, just one in every 14 over the past week. Experts say better treatments, more hospital capacity, and some levels of immunity may have helped push down the need for hospital care. Survival rates have improved too, with 8 in 10 intensive care patients now making it through their illness, up from fewer than half in April. So that is very, very positive news. When you're looking at the mainstream news and they're talking about locking down parts of Northern England because there's been an increase there, it gets everybody worried. But the truth is, it's massively gone down. It was 18,000 back there at the beginning of April in a week, and now it's just 375. So it's continually going down. We are beating it. If it keeps going down at that rate, then why have we still got the lockdown? Why aren't they opening things up a little bit more? If we're only getting 375 people a week hospitalised with it now, then surely it would make sense to open things up a bit more. Am I just being overly optimistic here? I am a fairly optimistic person, as I'm sure you all will have realised. Anyway, thank you very much for listening. I will be back tomorrow with more of the Daily Nationalist for you. God bless and hail victory.
You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.